order. And for the record, Senator Frank, Senator Menard, Senator Zaroff, Senator Cotton, Senator Jones are present. First on the agenda today, we have Senate Bill number 345 and 346. We have 345 here. 346, that's right. 345 is Fisheries Development Endowment Loans. 346 is the appropriation for Fisheries Development Loans. Last meeting, we decided we wanted to add a section that would strengthen the investment section of the bill. Senator Frank, do you remember that discussion?
That's the other bill number 346?
346.
345, I think, is the authorizing
right.
The statute, and 346 is the appropriation.
Changes. This one? Section C is new. Okay, so all section C.
All section C. All section C. All right.
All this language in accordance with the
looks good to me. Pulled right out of the
statute.
Right out of their investment policy. Which is
okay, we're back in order.
No, I'm confused. I forgot.
Has to do with it.
The new committee substitute of 345.
We don't have that.
No.
It's on page 2. We've added on line 4, part C, recipient loan may under this section may invest the principal of the loan only in the following financial instruments or investments, and it runs down all of the criteria for the investment for those funds. So.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Frank?
I'm not terribly familiar with this kind of stuff, but it looks like a pretty restricted list, although there are lots of options. You know, are we on teleconference?
We are on telecom.
It looks like a fairly restrictive. It's pulled right out of the foundation's operating policies, it certainly satisfies my interest in seeing some, you know, something put in the statute that would protect the state's interest. And I think you could, you know, there's probably a number of ways of expanding the list a bunch of acceptable additions that, you know, could be made. It's probably not necessary. If the foundation is comfortable with this language, then I'm certainly comfortable with it.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand that people that worked on this here after our last meeting, they are comfortable with this.
Okay, Senator Cotton.
Is there a definition for endowment? And if not, or if there is, can someone tell me that, is there any restrictions, legal restrictions, against a recipient of this loan from spending all the money? And if they did, you know, they could invest it following these rules, and they could comply with the requirements to provide copies of annual reports and auditing, and so forth, but I don't see anywhere in here that would restrict a recipient from just spending the money or giving it out in grants. And that's probably something that's just staring me in the face, and I've overlooked it, but I don't see a prohibition in this legislation.
Senator
Chairman, I don't quite understand the question. I mean, you have the endowment of $5 million, and it's the recipient in this case is.
Is the appropriate? Does the appropriation bill restrict the recipient to only being able to spend the interest, or does the appropriation bill not address that subject? Point is, I mean, say AFDF received the money, and our intention is that they'd be able to spend only the interest. But is there any prohibition against them spending the principal as well?
Well, Mr. Chairman, it certainly is the intent there that the principal would remain intact, and then that the earnings from the principal would be the portion there that would be made available to AFDF.
Yeah, I understand the intent.
Right.
But although I think we all agree that's the intent, I'm not sure that the legislation requires that to be the case.
Senator Menard.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess going back to Senator Cotton's first part, is there a definition of endowment that we have in statute, or are we saying that an endowment is allowing only the spending of the interest earned? Anybody?
I can't answer that. I don't.
Anyone in the audience know?
Staff. Carl, do you know?
For the record, Carl Olds with Senator Jaroff's staff. For the record, it's Carl Olds with Senator Jaroff's staff. Mr. Chairman, Senator Menard. I think in this bill, endowment is what the legislature defines it as. And actually, this bill makes a loan, and we're calling it an endowment loan.
But just following up on that, when you're saying the intent that we're all talking about is that only the interest earned or the interest that's earned in the endowment and not the principal gets spent. Are you telling me that that's what the definition of the endowment is in statute?
Yes, more or less, yeah. In Senate Bill 345, Mr. Chairman, it lays out what this program is supposed to be. So, yes, that would be what it would be.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Just to address Senator Cotton's concern, if possible, in Senate Bill 345, there at lines 12 through 14, it has the conditions of the loan that it must be repaid within 10 years. It's a period of 10 years only, and it's made without interest. There probably could be more protections put in there, but that's the legal requirement is that money has to come back to the state in 10 years.
Well, as long as excuse me.
Senator Cotton, in 346, the next bill we're looking at on page 2, it mentions it mentions that the principal has to return to the state after 10 years, but it doesn't say anything about not spending anything.
I think it's cool.
Senator Frank?
It's a little unusual. I mean, this is a little unusual. It's an unusual deal. We don't do these all the time. So I think it's a good point Sam brings up. I'm wondering if perhaps language that said something like no more than the an amount equal to the previous year's earnings could be dispersed as grants or something like that. I don't know. I'm just thinking as you asked that question, I think it's a good question, but I'm not sure how you say you can't spend the principal.
How about just that?
Right.
You can't spend the principal. So yeah. You can only spend the
earnings. Yeah.
That's pretty
well, because I'll tell you why. Because I think that if you give them the $5 million and they've got it in their bank account, it isn't separate and distinct. I don't know how to say this very well, but
I mean, it's not like they're going to go out and buy one certificate of deposit and get a monthly, a periodic interest payment on it. They're going to manage their cash in a, you know, in an active portfolio, and they will be redeeming certificates of deposit and all those other, you know, all those other investments, and they will be using them to buy new certificates and new investments, and the money will be flowing all around, and they'll be able to do that most efficiently, if they aren't overly restricted. The effect is that we don't want them to spend more than that which they earn, I guess. But I don't know what the financial effect or the cash management effect of just saying you can't spend the principal would be. I think we probably should listen to what some financial manager, cash manager, would say about how to structure that type of language.
Personally. I'm not sure that they can intermingle these funds with the rest of their accounts. I mean, if it's an endowment.
Well, we don't know.
I guess we need the definition of endowment, but. I'm not sure they
can. Well, I think you can. I think. It's kind of like the argument that we get into, just to digress for a minute, you know, with our state's treasury, you know, and we think we've got the Railbelt Energy Fund and this fund and that fund and that fund, and it's all commingled in a cash account that they used, you know, and they've got it invested all these different places, right? It's not like they've got, you know, all those separate, you know, bank accounts for every one of those funds. They're all funds within the general fund, so to speak, or something, but anyway.
Maybe that.
Well, it doesn't matter to me how this is resolved. I think this is an outstanding idea. I support this bill. I support what the intent of it is, and I think that it would have a good chance of passing if all these questions were resolved before it got to a floor situation. So if the chairman and the sponsor prefer to have the bill advance at this point, I certainly don't have an objection to that. I do believe that question has to be answered at some point, and the intent, I think, is very clear. I don't think the legislation completely describes what we'd like to see taken care of.
What if we did make an amendment to that effect so that our position was clear and let them come up with better language if necessary?
A letter of finance.
No, just say, you know, put it in a section that says you can't spend the principal.
That'd be satisfactory to me.
And then they can, you know, if that's too crude of language, they can, you guys can fix it up in finance.
Wayne.
Yeah. I mean, I'm concerned that it might be a little crude, you know, it might not be flexible.
Senator Menard.
Yeah, I would go along with that intent. I think I go along with Senator Frank that by just saying that, it probably would restrict, because I imagine who's whatever board or whatever is dispensing these monies, they're not getting a day-to-day account on from the banking type stuff. It may be quarterly or something like that, which may fluctuate. And if it's mandates in there that they can't spend any of the principal, it might at one time dip down below it and it might step their hand. But I would go along with putting that in there and then moving it up to finance and let them fine-tune it a little bit if that's what the sponsor wishes.
Well, Mr. Chairman, doesn't make too much difference to me there. If we want to take another day or two to work on it down here and get it right,
okay,
we can certainly do that. But
we could do that.
You know, I certainly
have it back Wednesday, Senator.
I would certainly hope that when we come back Wednesday, then that somebody else doesn't throw another question on top of this, because this is something there that we we worked on last time. And you know, I kind of felt a little bit comfortable there in that, subsection F there, the Commissioner of Commerce and Economic Development has the ability and authority to adopt the regulations for this bill. And I'm sure in that adoption of those regulations that it's going to...
Maybe that's the way to go.
It's going to, take care of any problems there regarding the principal and interest. But, you know, certainly if we want to hold it up again, that's fine.
The last thing I want to do is hold up the rule of chairman. So I would agree I don't know whether you ever do this, but we could agree to a conceptual amendment that just kind of says what we want to say, trust you to get it in there and move it up.
You want them?
I'd sign the bill out today under
committee,
the circumstances.
You want a committee substitute as amended?
That's fine. Whatever you want to do.
You want to adopt a committee substitute as amended?
I'd so move, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Any objections? If not, we now have committee substitute as amended for Senate Bill number 345. For us.
I'd move that we pass Senate Bills 345 and 346 out of committee. Or do you want the motion to close?
That's fine. Any objections? Not so ordered.
All right. I have to hook now, too.
All right, now we'll go on to a hearing we have on Consumer Reports article. At least that's what inspired this this hearing. And we have, you all have a folder.
Are we getting some pieces in there?
I'll just read that. I just want to read our kind of what my viewpoints are on this. The subject is the seafood quality hearing today. And if you haven't already read the Consumer Reports article, I would encourage you to review it. It is in your packet. While the article was misleading as far as contamination of Alaska salmon, it pointed out just how vulnerable our products are in the hands of the retailer. Much of the problem with poor quality seafood seems to be in the hands of retailers. These are the people that ultimately make the decision on what product they sell. They are the people who receive the fish. They make the decision as to what to sell, under what name the product sells, and what quality of fish to sell. In a sense, the Consumer Report article, except for the erroneous reports on salmon, is a positive reminder of the high stakes we have invested in the retailer. These businesses are the gatekeeper for quality of all seafood. They can refuse poor quality seafood. They can make high quality seafood inferior through poor handling techniques. And that's some of the things I think we need to be cognizant of and keep in mind as we go through this hearing. And online, we have several sites: Anchorage, Ketchikan, Kodiak, Sitka, Wrangell. And we have Bruce Wedig with the National Marine Fisheries online in Washington, D.C., and Kit Ballantyne, D.C. She's in San Diego. She's attending a seafood conference down there. And here in Juneau, we have Commissioner D.C., John Sandor with us. Also in Anchorage, Doug Donegan of Trident Seafoods, who will speak from a processor's perspective, and Tom Billy of the FDA's Office of Seafood, Office of Seafoods in Washington, D.C., and or we may have Roger Lowell of the Seattle FDA office on. So we have a number of people that are here, knowledgeable in the with the subject, and would anybody from the committee like to make a statement at this time? All right. I think at this time, seeing as how there's a big difference in on what time it is here in the where they are back in Washington, D.C., I'd like to call on Mr. Lee Wedig, Executive Director of the National Fisheries Institute. Mr. Wedig?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Real good. Believe it or not, we can hear you clearly.
Nothing works here, huh? How do you want to proceed, gentlemen?
Well, Mr. Wedig, I'm just wondering if you had a statement you'd like to make about you know, how things are progressing and ensuring that we get a high quality product to the consumer.
Okay, thank you. particular problem that we have, which seems to be a constant questioning of the wholesomeness and quality of seafood, is with mandatory seafood regulation inspection that we've been working for with the Congress. We think that even though product that would come out of Alaska, as an example, and other parts of this country might be exceptionally high quality and safe
the
product, that
the National
Fisheries
Institute
is to make certain that all of the product on the market is subject to a comprehensive regulatory program. So we believe that can be done only if there's a seafood legislation, seafood inspection legislation mandated by the Congress. Now, just how that should be set up, I'm sure, is open to any point of view. With the NFI viewpoint is that a system based on half of the hazard analysis critical control point principles is what we need, and that it should apply mandatorily to all aspects of the seafood industry, with the enforcement mechanism to include both federal and state organizations where the states are interested in being involved in it. We've asked Congress to do this, and there was good attempts at legislation in 1990. Unfortunately, the measures got tied up in some jurisdictional questions, and so there was no final law passed. We expect that the Congress will open the issue again here in the next few weeks, especially since this media attention is causing some interest up on Capitol Hill, and so I think the issue will become a working issue again in the near future. But in the meantime, quite a bit has been done. The industry has been working with the Food Drug Administration and the National Marine Fisheries Service to develop the HACCP-based programs, and we expect that they will become available on a for-fee basis voluntarily sometime in 1992, and we would be encouraging the industry processors to take advantage of that. Likewise, programs are being developed that would provide for a HACCP type of system for the retailers. And I think this would be very important to try to correct some of the difficulties and problems that were pointed out by Consumers Union. We do take great exception to the Consumers Union assessments, not only for the statements that were made about salmon in general, which we still haven't quite figured out where they came up with some of the numbers that they did, but we also think that the verbiage that was used to describe the quality of fish in the market was somewhat overstated, and the reliance on simple bacteriological studies to make sweeping assessments as to fish being spoiled was just wrong scientifically, and I'm not too sure much can be done about it at this point in time, except that there isn't too much question that there is need for improved handling procedures at the retail market. Particularly, I think the need to recognize that unfrozen fresh fish does not remain fresh forever, and there is a need to have some more rigid criteria as to when fish should be pulled from the shelves when it no longer has any high quality life left. That, I'm afraid, is going to be something that each retail management is going to have to determine, because it's hard to legislate quality. I think we can legislate and mandate safety and wholesomeness, but quality is something else, and the consumer is going to have to have some responsibility in determining what level of quality they're willing to take for a given amount of money. But what we think is necessary here is the development of mandatory seafood legislation, mandatory seafood inspection legislation, and that system be applicable throughout the chain from the time the product is caught to the time that it is sold, and that in the meantime, greater efforts going to have to be made on education at the retail level and use of the voluntary programs. And I think, thinking of it from Alaska's viewpoint, there's probably a need for consumer education to try to overcome this rather poor attitude that fresh is necessarily better than frozen. And I think we all know frozen product is a better value than the poor quality fresh product that might be many times found on the marketplace. That's about all I had to say on a prepared basis. I'd be very happy to answer any questions or get into any kind of discussion you might wish.
All right. Thank you. Is any questions from the committee? Senator Cox.
Is the gentleman from FDA going to speak as well today?
Yes, the FDA does have a representative.
Well, I don't know if Mr. Wettig has had any discussions with the folks from FDA, but definitions could play a role in this as well, and I'd be interested to hear. Perhaps I should have waited until I heard from Mr. Billy, but maybe Mr. Wettig has a comment on whether or not there's his recommendations would include a definition of fresh, and as he points out, all that means is that it's never been frozen. Now, at some point, it's going to be pretty obvious that it's not a fresh fish, but I think with some other foods, there's either a regulatory or a statutory definition of the word fresh, and I just wonder if he's had any experience or any recommendations with that idea.
Well, so far, Senator, we haven't tried to come up with a definition of fresh because the variables that are involved in the different seafood products are so severe. The National Marine Fisheries Service, though, does have a criteria called Grade A, which can apply to both fresh or frozen product, and there's always been a difficulty in administering it because at the time of examination, the product could exhibit the sensory characteristics of a Grade A fresh fish, but that, of course, doesn't last forever, and there's a real need for pull dates, I think, on unfrozen product that will get it, remove it from the shelves when it has reached the end of its life. Unfortunately, the handling that takes place from the time the product is pulled from the water is going to be have a lot to do with those determining the pull dates, and I don't think anyone's been able to figure out exactly how much shelf life is going to be available for even the same species because of the way it's been handled prior to the time it gets to the market is going to really determine how much shelf life is left. The best I think we can do is to include in the system for the retailers some formal method of evaluation that will determine for each lot of fish that they have that it should be removed from the market as being a fresh product. The second part about this that makes life even more difficult is that there seems to be a natural tendency that when you want to remove fresh product from the case, because it's nearing the end of its life, the normal thing that happens is that the product is then thrown in the freezer, and now we have poor quality frozen fish on the market as well. And I frankly just don't know what the answer is to this because I don't know what's worse, having poor quality fresh fish there or just transferring it over to provide poor quality frozen product that can then tar the image of good quality frozen product.
Senator Cotton.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I think that most people, at least the people that do a good job of putting a fresh and high-quality piece of merchandise out, would like to get credit for it somehow, and probably willing to pay for it if they could get that credit. So I think that's what we're looking at, and I'll keep listening.
You know, in the article it mentions about the satisfactory temperatures to be between 30 and 32 degrees when, you know, displaying the fish in the retail store, and they were finally saying that there are state health codes in some states that allow it to be 45 degrees. And they've even found in some stores, they found the temperature 51 degrees. So, Mr. Wettig, I think it's important that somewhere along the line, those things have to change.
You're absolutely correct. The as one looks around the country at the refrigeration cases that are available for fresh fish, they certainly have a great deal of variability, and even the ones that are newer that are designed to maintain temperature at close to 32 degrees very often don't do it. One with the opening of doors and poor practice. amount of product, I think the idea is to know the abundance. But the result of that, in our mind, is that the actual temperature at which the product at the top of these piles is maintained is probably not very cold. And I think the retail industry really has to re-examine its methods of displaying the merchandise, and then go back and take a look at the cases, and it may be that regulation is necessary to keep those temperatures down to as close to 32 as possible.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions? All right. If not, let's move to is Roger Lowe online with the FDA in Seattle?
Oh, I'm afraid that he had to step out for a little while. He's at a conference here in San Pedro, California, to give a talk. This is Tom Billy speaking, however, with FDA. I'm also in San Pedro, California, attending the same conference.
Is this Tom Billy?
Yes.
All right, Tom, we have you down also. Tom, would you like to carry on?
That would be fine. In looking at the Consumer Reports article, and particularly as they relate to people's quality, we have severe reservations about the study that was done by Consumer Reports, and then particularly the methodology that was used to determine whether people were decomposed or not. We find the use of global plate counts inconsistent both with our policies as well as with recommendations of the National Academy of Sciences. That said, however, we do agree that there is room for improvement in the quality of seafood at retail, and believe that many of the problems that are encountered by consumers are the result of bad practices by the retail sector. I thought it might be useful to talk a little bit about how FDA currently addresses the retail sector and amplifies further beyond what Lee Letty said in terms of this new program, this hazard analysis that one area where we in FDA can perhaps
Mr. Billy?
The purpose of the pilot test is to make sure that the type of code is going to work.
Okay. All right, Mr. Billy was cutting out pretty bad here, so what we'll do is move on. And let's move to Doug Donegan of Trident Seafoods in Anchorage. Mr. Donegan, are you on? Mr. Donegan, are you on?
No, he's going.
We're not hearing.
Yeah.
Pay your phone bill last week?
Yes, were you going to give us a little perspective from the processor's point of view on the product, getting a good product out of the retail end?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's interesting that the problem is at the producers end and the retail end, but it seems to me that I'm a member of the Halibut Commission, as you probably know, and that we've had a lot of complaints over the years that the processors are buying fish, for example, that aren't cleaned. We're speaking about halibut. They're buying large volumes of fish which they can't process in a reasonable length of time, and it seems to me that we're hearing that in some areas in Western Alaska that the fish is not all that great after it's processed because of those different factors, aside from the harvesting, the rate of harvest. Is that right?
I would disagree with that. What I have seen in my experience in the fisheries is that at one time processors did have difficulty in keeping up with the increased deliveries of halibut. I think we've gone far beyond that point.
Chairman, it's my understanding that of course the processors have the option of not buying those fish that aren't clean. They have the option of not buying a poor grade of halibut which comes in from the fishing industry. It seems to me that if the processors continue to buy a poor product, you're going to result, you're going to process a poor product, and evidently this sort of flops over into the other species where maybe, for instance, the processor will buy a poor grade of halibut, which obviously could be the producer's part, but they'll buy the fish in either case because they're assured of, say, a certain type of salmon during the rest of the season. They feel like they're obligated to buy a poor product. And if that in case is the fact, then of course the product is being processed as poor. Well, no, that's debatable. I do think that the processors are obligated to buy a decent product that's of a good quality. If they don't, maybe the fishermen themselves will deliver a better product. I would sincerely urge that the industry use that approach because I don't feel they should be forced to buy something that is not of a higher of a good grade. I do know that many fishermen do take care of their fish. They do bring a good product to market. They do sell a good product. But unfortunately, they're getting the same amount of money for the fish as someone who don't take care of the damn fish. That's what really irritates the industry. But beyond that, I guess then if you're talking about quality and about the fast production of halibut, for example, probably the IFQ proposal probably alleviate that problem. Is that right? John, I guess the question really was, is that if we're talking about a large amount of product delivered in a short amount of time, which is primarily halibut, we're going to deliver some neighborhood of 60 million pounds in 3 days this year, that maybe the IFQ proposal would solve the quality product, the problem we're having.
Doug, what happens when you do get a load of bad salmon or halibut or any other product for whatever reason? The tender system broke down or the tender inadvertently bought a load of fish that had been in a fishing boat's hold for 3 or 4 days. What do you do when you see a load of fish like that?
Poor quality, the fisherman receives a lower price, and it is, of course, sold for a lower price as
Well, I guess I don't really understand how that system works, but I'd be interested, do you keep records on fish that you dispose of and grade down as a result of poor quality? Is there, like, not just your company, but are there records that you keep in that matter?
Yes, there are, and I think the Department of Environmental Conservation has some record keeping as well on voluntary destructions.
Because I know that, you know, the people I sell fish to, I mean, it's the price is the price is the price, and if you get some bad fish in your plant, that's just part of your overall price calculation. That's where I agree with Senator Eliason that that those of us that like to think that we do a good job of handling quality, we pay the price the same as the person who doesn't take care of their fish. So I'd be interested in whatever statistics or other information you might have there as far as how many fish are destroyed as a result of being, you know, rotten fish or whatever. Would you be willing to share something like that with us?
I don't have that information available at my fingertips, but I can inquire with our Seattle office to track that and tell you what the figures were for the last few years. I think in our company they're probably fairly low. We keep a good eye on our tenders and our fishing boats, and the product we see delivered across the docks is uniformly of pretty good quality. And I also know that many companies do pay a differential based on quality. And by quality, I mean your basic parameters such as a number one, a number two, a number three. For both halibut and salmon, there are obviously gradings within those categories, such as number one bright, et cetera, that come into play that there may not be differentials paid for.
Well, we see, you know, some companies do and some companies don't. The company I sold to would take the temperature of an average fish every time I'd make a delivery. So, again, I got credit for a higher quality fish as a result of it, but most processors wouldn't do that. But if you are willing to share, information as to how many fish are disposed of because they're poor quality, I'd like to see that. DEC, do you report to DEC on that as well, as far as fish that you dispose of under those conditions?
Sometimes we do. We're not required to. I want to emphasize here, we don't destroy fish of poor quality. We just destroy fish that are unwholesome, and that means that they're either decomposed, a lot is uniformly decomposed, or they're contaminated.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Donegan. All right, we'll move back to San Pedro. Tom Billy, are you still there? You were breaking up pretty bad, so we had to cut you off, and we're going to start again. I'd like you to start out, and we'll see how it goes. If you just pause after about maybe 30 seconds or so and give us a chance to let you know if you're coming through clear. Mr. Billy?
I was speaking into a speakerphone, and instead of doing that, I picked up the receiver, so hopefully it should be much clearer.
You are. You're coming in very good at this time. Please proceed. Sorry for the interruption.
That's okay. What I was describing was this new joint program using HACCP, and the bottom line is that it's a new approach that we plan to apply at the retail level, and it allows us to get at some of these very issues that you've been talking about. For example, it will impose a requirement that the fish as it arrives at the retail warehouse be checked to make sure that the product is wholesome and can then be delivered into the store.
All right. At this time, I was wondering if anybody from ASME or DEC had any questions. Many of these people, you, commissioners?
Valentine is online in California.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Billy. If you'd like to stand by, why, we're going to continue on with some more testimony and maybe some things will be brought up that would be of interest.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We'll go to Kit Valentine. Are you in San Diego there?
Yes, I am. In San Pedro.
San Pedro. You're the same place. Billy, okay. Would you like to comment on this subject?
I'd like to just briefly indicate what we're doing in regard to our total inspection program. We already have, as I'm sure you all are aware, a fairly comprehensive seafood inspection program at the processing level. And many of the elements in our existing program were elements that were proposed in several years worth of federal legislation that has been introduced. Basically, it's our goal to look at and develop a comprehensive seafood inspection program from catch to consumer so that we could and part of the proposed federal legislation was that states could request that they be considered equivalent to the federal inspection program. It is our desire to upgrade the existing program so that we would then be able to be in the position that we could make that such a request should the legislation be passed. And basically, the elements that we see in our existing program that would need to be increased are a vessel inspection program, which at this point we do not have a vessel inspection program. We feel that we have worked in concert with Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. They feel that some kind of low-interest loan program should accompany a vessel inspection program, so that would enable vessel owners with visiting fishing vessels, would enable them to have an economic means of performing the upgrades that they might have to make on their vessels to come into compliance with the vessel inspection program. This would be a graduated inspection program. You had a modern fiberglass vessel, for example, that was brand new. You would probably be on a 3-year inspection frequency and receive some kind of an inspection seal. However, as opposed to if you had a wooden vessel that would have much more difficulty continuing to maintain minimum standards, then you would be on an annual inspection program. In addition, we feel that our laboratory needs to have additional staff and equipment in order to support minimum contaminant sampling, such as sampling for domoic acid. We feel that it's very important to support marketing of our products to have an ongoing domoic acid sampling program. At the present time, our laboratory staff is not capable of performing a comprehensive monitoring program, and we would need to rely on other laboratories for support, such as National Marine Fisheries and Food and Drug Administration. Looking at the retail sector, we intend to increase our retail inspection program in seafood markets, develop a comprehensive training program, which would include the HACCP principles that Mr. Billy mentioned, as well as revise our regulations to speak to concerns such as product holding temperatures. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Senator Lassen?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. You mentioned a small loan program. Was that a federal loan program you're speaking of? Well, you're with the federal, you're with the feds, aren't you?
No, I'm the, this is Kit Valentine, the acting director of the Division of Environmental Health.
Okay. Sorry, I thought you were talking from the federal agency's viewpoint. I guess what concerns a lot of us, too, is that I don't know what percentage, but a very high percentage of plastic seafoods are caught by catcher processors and out of the really the jurisdiction of the state. How are we going to deal with that?
There are catcher processors that are outside of territorial waters?
Well, we're, I think most of the seafood products are caught outside of state waters. So I can understand how we could, you know, emphasize, put our emphasis on the smaller boats who are moored in Alaska ports and the wooden vessels and things of that nature, but they aren't the big producers, and I would suspect that there is a quality problem, sure, but nevertheless, they're not the big producers of seafood in Alaska, and I was wondering how we're going to manage that other element.
Are you thinking of fishing vessels, large fishing vessels, or are you thinking of processors?
I'm thinking of any vessel that fishes inside or outside Alaska waters.
That is a question that we have not addressed, and it would be very appropriate for us to address.
But Mr. Billy, are you still on? Did you hear that question from Senator Eliason about the vessels that are operating outside of state waters? Do you have any thoughts on that? How an inspection program could go on there?
Well, we in Food and Drug have worked out an arrangement with the state to inspect those vessels. In fact, in the last year, we've significantly increased our contract arrangement, our support to a contract to the state to carry out such inspection. And as part of an overall national survey, initially, we're looking at every single one of those vessels to make sure that they're in compliance with our federal good manufacturing practice type regulations. And it is our plan to maintain some frequency of spot checking or inspection of those vessels in the future.
Well, now those vessels could be coming out of any port.
That's right. They could come out of any port, but most often they put into some Alaskan port.
Not necessarily.
Yeah, Dutch Harbor or Kodiak or one of the key fishing ports, and that's how the arrangements are worked out. I'd like to comment on this notion of vessel inspection. I'm familiar with most of the recognized systems in various countries around the world, particularly those that are looked on very favorably, and virtually all of them have some kind of a basic sanitation type inspection set of requirements that apply to the vessels to make sure that they're capable of properly handling the fish on board. It is viewed as an important part of the whole process from the water to the consumer. Well, many things can go wrong there, and I think it's a good idea to think about ensuring some minimum sanitary requirements, ability to process gut or whatever, and then store fish on vessel until you put in the port.
Mr. Billy, were you thinking of giving the state jurisdiction to board vessels?
We have already.
No matter where they are?
Yes, that's right. Although normally it's when they come into port. I mean, that's the, otherwise the logistics, the cost of getting people around out on in the Bering Sea would be something that would make it very difficult for us. So. We normally, under normal conditions, we're trying to do it tied to these vessels putting into port.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Billy, I was wondering, do you have formulated what type of requirements we're going to have for, say, the inshore vessels, the one that the majority of them are moored in Alaska, they fish in Alaska waters? Do you have a criteria or a blueprint they can follow to make sure they're in compliance with before they are cited for not being in compliance?
Currently, under our seafood inspection program and FDA, we are focusing initially at the vessel level. We're targeting these larger catcher processors, if you will, or processing vessels that are in effect a processing plant that happens to be floating or motoring somewhere to catch fish as well. The smaller vessels, particularly those that fish near shore and within state waters, my thought would be that a HACCP type plan that's been developed for vessels by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration is a good model to look at in terms of its application to this area. In addition, the current requirements of manufacturing practices that we have that apply to plants also have a number of the features that I would feel would apply equally as well to vessels. The basic notion of having a sanitation plan for how they're going to clean up the hold area and at what frequency, the requirement to hold product at proper temperature, to store ice if they use ice and under sanitary conditions, to have potable water on board and that kind of thing. So most of what we're talking about are very straightforward requirements applied to all foods, including seafoods.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would only hope that that before any firm plan is put in place, that your people or whoever is going to draw up the final regulations would take the time to come into Alaska and to be go on site and look at what we have here, and maybe make some suggestions that might not that would be adaptable to this to what we're doing already without having them totally rebuild their boats or go out of business.
I take that as an invitation. I would be delighted.
Come up in June. There's lots of salmon.
thank you. I think it's a very reasonable request and an important one. That's exactly what needs to happen if we're going to put something in place that's going to be effective and reasonable in terms of the industry.
In other words, he'd love to come.
All right. Kit, Valentine, did you have any more?
This is Kit Valentine. I'd just like to add that the vessel inspection program that we were proposing was had the elements that Mr. Billy was addressing, and we were looking at a program that was similar to the Canadian vessel inspection program, which has been put in place for many years and has been very successful and has, in fact, improved product quality and handling processes.
Okay, thank you. All right, here in Juneau, what's the way from ASME? Mary Gore, would you like to say a few words?
For the record, my name is Mary Gore. I'm with the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. ASME has a variety of different programs that we use in the marketplace. We currently work at the retail level with a video and a handout. Also at the food service level with retail video and a handout. Both of these are designed to educate retailers and food service operators how to handle seafood. About 2.5 months before the Consumer Report article came out, ASME started running ads for a retail training video, and we ended up having to reproduce the actual video. We already had 300 copies out in circulation. We've reproduced another 300 copies, and it's accompanied with a little handbook that has also been distributed nationwide. I just got a call about a week and a half ago from a lady in Tennessee that wanted to reproduce this and hand it out with all of her programs that she does. She was a wholesaler in that area of the country. On the food service side, we also have a little handout that goes out with the video for food service operators that talks about handling seafood products directly at the food service level. We have a variety of different books that have been produced in conjunction with the Marine Advisory Program, also with DEC here in the state, that talks about handling at the fisherman's level, so that we basically follow the chain all the way from harvester through the processing level, finally ending up at either the retail or the food service level in the marketplace. We also have a brochure that's been developed specifically for the consumer, telling the consumer basically how to look for proper seafood when they are buying it in the grocery store. And we encourage the seafood consumer not to buy seafood if it's not properly handled. If the shop smells like a fish store, don't buy it, because a fish store shouldn't smell like a fish store. It should smell clean. And we tell people this and encourage them only to buy proper handled products. It's our feeling that if the consumer takes home a bad piece of fish, pays $7 or $8 for it to start with, cooks it and does a bad job cooking it to start with, and then has this terrible smell in her house and his house, and you know, that doesn't taste well, they're never going to buy it again. If they buy a bad piece of beef, they attribute it to something happened somewhere along the line, and they'll continue to buy beef, but they will not buy seafood if they buy it once and it's not right. So we're working as closely as we can with all varieties of the spectrum within the dollar amounts that we have in our budget.
Question,
Senator Cotton. The fellow from either NFI or FDA, I can't remember who, said that there are 300,000 retail outlets in the United States. How many, in your best guess, how many retail outlets handle Alaskan seafood products? All of them? Or half of them? Most of them?
Sure, most of them.
So no, and you've sent out 300 of these. And
no, actually, I don't have a real idea. What we do is work with, like, we'll send one out to Safeway. Safeway will reproduce the video and will send out a supply of these with the video to Safeway directly, and Safeway reproduces it. And we get questions all the time from major companies like that as to if they can do that, if that's legal.
I guess my point is, how can you hope to grapple with 300,000? I mean, you just, I mean, it's just too overwhelming for you, isn't it? I mean, you can peck away at that a little bit, but it seems like you can't really do anything to really help the retail outlets in the United States.
That's correct. Unfortunately, two-thirds of what is produced, of seafood that is produced in the state, or seafood generally, goes into the food service level. And we're working at that level extensively. More so of our budget goes into the food service level than at the retail level. If you'd like to give us more money, though, we could certainly target more of the 300,000 grocery stores around the country.
I don't know if you can get there from here. I mean, I don't know. It seems like it'd be pretty major effort required. So I'm not criticizing you. I'm just saying it looks like that might be a job that's a little bit big for our our effort. And hopefully the federal government will recognize that, although they don't have as much interest in it as we do. So good luck.
Right. Now, we're working directly primarily at the corporate level headquarters around the country with the corporate buyers of Safeway, Albertsons, Kroger, A&P. The corporate buyers of, like, Long John Silver's, Skipper's, that push a lot of product through. And that's a level that we have to target on, because there isn't any possible way to reach 300,000 retail buyers, grocery store buyers. But there aren't 300,000 people that actually buy at that retail level. There may be one buyer that buys for 60 stores, 80 stores, 100 stores, and those are the people that you have to get to. You have to educate the person at the counter how to handle it once it's there, and that's very important. But we're working at each individual level as well as we can.
Well, it seems like the food service folks, too, are more likely to be like Long John Silver. So what do they get, cod fillets, and maybe do they have pollock and cod fillets?
Yes.
I mean, I've seen those machines operate, and they get a box of food, and you know, they're professionals, they handle it, and but that's a completely different situation than a piece of salmon or halibut that shows up in a grocery store. It seems like you got two different, completely different circumstances there.
It's very true, and that's why it, you know, you need an extensive education program at the consumer level also to educate the consumer what to look for. And if the consumer refuses it, the retailer refuses it, it'll go all the way back down to the chain until finally somebody will start taking care of the product somewhere along the line.
Mr. Chairman, I'm tempted to ask about 2 hours worth of questions about ASME here today, but I'll back off. Maybe I hope that you'll invite them back, and maybe we can have an hour and a half or so with ASME just to cover a broader range. Thanks.
Very good.
Thank you. Commissioner Sandor, would you like to make comments at this time?
Mr. Chairman, I just came to listen primarily because we are exploring opportunities with ASME, NOAA, ADF, and G for opportunities for strengthening the program, especially preparing for what we believe is to be an almost certain federally mandated improved inspection program. And we want to be in a position to have in place an inspection program that meets all the federal requirements so that we, in fact, will be able to run our own program.
Mr. Cotton?
Can we get a look at what you're expecting? Obviously, it's going to have an effect on your budget, so have you planned, for instance, how many field personnel do you have right now that are involved in seafood inspection, at plants or whatever? How many people do you have out in the field right now?
Mr. Chairman, we have 20 people in 11 different locations. Kit Valentine, who's online and can elaborate on this, and point out that by utilizing cross-servicing of people who formerly worked in seafood inspection, we increased our inspection programs to 1,400 and some versus 750 in 1990, but what we're looking at is the kinds of expertise that will be able to do the testing for domoic acid and these PCBs and other chemicals that we have not been testing for before. Kit, correct me if I'm wrong, but your expectation, I think, as we chatted this morning, was possibly a $50,000 increase in this fiscal year, which would be proposed in the supplemental, but substantially more in next year. Kit, are you still online?
Yes, I am.
Could you outline for the senator and for the committee kind of what we tentatively have in mind, and bearing in mind, Mr. Chairman, that we are working with ASME and the other agencies to develop a program that will strengthen, as Kit points out, have a vessel inspection program as well. But can you identify what you have in mind for this year and then next year in trying to anticipate what the federal legislation will require with regard to inspections?
We would anticipate this year requesting a supplemental in the amount of approximately $100,000, and that what this would cover would be the cost of a chemist and an environmental technician who would be solely responsible for a domoic acid sampling program. We feel that this would be, and that would also include the cost of about $50,000 worth of one-time equipment cost. There is a very specific time, we would do public noticing, let people know that the inspector was there, and they would be available to do vessel inspection. And they would travel throughout the state doing that on a rotating basis. We feel that program would cost about $125,000 and would have about $5,000 worth of one-time equipment costs. In addition, if we are to extend our laboratory capabilities so that we can do comprehensive contaminant analysis such as heavy metals, listeria, vibrio, we would need some additional an additional chemist, an additional environmental technician, we'd need additional microbiologists and environmental technicians, and we anticipate that that would be about $300,000. So we're talking about a total package that would be around $500,000.
Mr. Commissioner, then that's, I thought you phrased the question just the way I was interested in the answer, and you would expect that if we were to authorize those expenditures, we would meet the guidelines that the federal government is likely to establish. Is that correct?
That's our objective, Mr. Chairman and Senator Cotton.
That's your objective, but would you say that this amount would meet those requirements?
That's right. Kit Valentine is working closely with Food and Drug Administration and ASME and the other organizations to do that. But our objective very specifically is to anticipate what the federal requirements would be, to have those in place when the legislation is enacted so that we would be in a position to run the program. I should also say that we've discussed in preliminary forum with the Office of Management and Budget and we'll put this package together and run it through the regular process.
If I could, Mr. Chair, finally, maybe could you distribute it to us after OMB takes a look at it? I'm just curious. I hadn't really seen what the feds were going to require or what you expect them to. So if we can get a look at that and then look at your response to it, I'd be interested in seeing that early enough to try to understand it. So that if it did get through OMB, then we'd have a little head start on it. So if I can get that stuff from you, I think I may be the only one. My guess is I'm not the only one to be interested in seeing that.
Yeah, we will do that.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Okay. You know what one. Things I think we're waiting for. Didn't we send some Alaskan fish some samples down and tested? What were the results of that?
Those tests are still not totally completed. Kit, if you're still online, you can correct me or update, but I think all of the tests so far have shown that all of our seafood is safe, well below the threshold limits. Not only with the standard testing procedures, but the domoic acids and the PCBs. As I understand it, Kit, the only tests that are still outstanding are those from one of the universities in Texas. And I think Kit told me this morning that the testers had indicated that or asked if they could eat the balance of the salmon, which suggests that the tests probably are going to be all right. But seriously, Kit, can you tell what tests remain and sort of summarize the results in more of a scientific way than I've been able to do?
I believe that we had sampling in three different laboratories. There were samples sent to the Food and Drug Administration laboratory in Seattle. There were also, and there were a total of 22 samples analyzed, 12 of them canned and 10 of them fresh or frozen. I believe there's six
you know, the state of Alaska, certainly we can control what goes on inside of our borders, but once the product leaves and heads somewhere else, why, we look toward the industry and it looks like federal government to ensure that the quality remains there, clear to the consumer. So I guess we're going to be watching you, and we're going to be, of course, watching ourselves. But I'd like to thank everybody for participating today and taking the time to give us their comments. Anything else from the committee? Okay, with that, we'll close the hearing. And if there's nothing further to come before the committee, we stand adjourned.